is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington, and here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
I'm so happy because just like it is a morning, everybody's happy in the morning. It's a new dawn. I'm so hopeful. Change is here.
That was Lusaka resident Miriam Mungu on Hakainde Hichilema's being elected as Zambia's new president. Details coming up. Also, United States Special Forces are being deployed to Eastern DRC to combat Islamist violence. These stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. In Zambia, Hakainde Hichilema of the United Party for National Development, UPND Alliance, is the new president-elect, having defeated incumbent president Edgar Lungu. He garnered 2.8 million votes, passing the more than 50% threshold needed to win. Lungu, who came second, garnered 1.8 million votes. VOA's Peter Cloutier has more from the Zambian capital, Lusaka.
I therefore declare the said Hichilema Hakainde S to be president-elect of the Republic of Zambia. This is 16th day of August 2021.
To cheers in the vote counting headquarters at the Mulungushi International Conference Center in Lusaka, Justice Esau Chulu announced that Hakainde Hichilema was the new president-elect. Representative of Hichilema's UPND alliance at the center erupted into celebration, popping open champagne bottles and tossing a soccer ball. Incumbent President Edgar Lungu has conceded the election, saying he would work toward a peaceful transition of power. On Saturday, he had said the election was not free and fair, citing irregularities and violence targeting his representatives at some polling stations. Political analysts say the contest was a referendum on Lungu's leadership. They cited what they say was the uneven enforcement of the Public Order Act, which regulates public gatherings, a clampdown on civil liberties and free speech, as well as the challenging economic conditions as some of the reasons for the president's defeat. Gary Nkombu, leader of the UPND Alliance representatives at the National Resource Center, says Hichilema's victory was a long time coming. He promised the incoming administration will reform the Public Order Act.
So I must tell you now that there's going to be a breath of fresh air in this country because we mean well for the development of this country.
He adds that the incoming government task will be to come up with ways to restructure the country's debt in order to give fiscal space to other sectors of the economy. This, he says, will help provide jobs for the youth and improve the living conditions of the people. Civil society groups had expressed concern about the use of hate speech and ethnocentric insults during the election campaign. Nkombo says the UPND alliance and its supporters were victims of tribal insults and hate speech. He says the new government will implement measures to unite the country.
And because we have been the victims of it, we want to be the shining example of how we can embrace other people from different ethnic extractions. And an example has already been shown in the presidential running mate, who is now the de facto vice president of this country, who comes from the north part of this country. And so this is a matter that we're going to neutralize in the fastest possible way.
UPND Alliance supporters gathered on the main street leading up to the entrance of the conference center, jubilating, cars honking and blowing vuvuzelas to celebrate the victory. Mr. Firi, a Lusaka resident, says he is confident that President-elect Hichilema will keep his promises.
I have a lot of joy this morning. And right now we are celebrating because we've changed the government, we've changed our leader who has promised us a lot of good things, good economy, you know, and a lot of jobs and free education.
Lusaka resident Miriam Mungu joined the celebration just steps away from the entrance of the Mulungushi Conference Center. She says expectations are high, adding that if Zambians work together with the incoming administration, things will improve.
I'm so happy because just like it is a morning, everybody's happy in the morning. It's a new dawn. I'm so hopeful. Change is here. I never thought this day would come, but look at us, we are here. That's why I'm happy.
Joseph Chanda called on the incoming leadership to quickly tackle what he says is the high unemployment rate among the youth.
This is a big achievement, especially for the young people of Zambia. Right now, unemployment is quite high in the country, and the economic performance has not been as good over the last 5 years, more especially last year during the COVID year. But the victory for Hakainde represents a new dawn for Zambia. This is a brilliant year, and we can only wish him the best during his tenure.
Thank
God
you.
Bless Zambia.
Under the electoral law, Hichilema is scheduled to be officially installed as president on August 24, 7 days after he was declared winner of the election. For VOA, I'm Peter Clote reporting from the Zambian capital, Lusaka.
The White House says U.S. Deputy National Security Advisor Jonathan Finer delivered a written message from President Joe Biden to Tunisia's President Kais Saied on Friday, reaffirming support for his people and urging a swift return to the path of democracy. He also mentioned the urgent need to appoint a prime minister designate to form a capable government. William Lawrence, professor of political science at the American University in Washington, discussed with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi whether the U.S. message would prompt the Tunisian leader to deliver.
Yes, definitely. It will prompt him to deliver on his own promise. Note that the U.S. support is for the Tunisian people, not for the president or his actions, as he has seized all power and disempowered all of his political rivals to a maximal extent. The key here is a swift return to constitutional order, which the U.S. believes will best respect chance of success for the Tunisia and the grievances of the Tunisian people, rather than a president that tries to solve every problem by himself with the support of the Tunisian street, but not any of the institutions or the political class. So the president will agree because his first announcement when he did the autogolpe or self-coup attempt, as we call this, he promised to name a prime minister the next day, I think 3 weeks back from tomorrow, Tuesday, and he hasn't done it. So everyone's calling for it. His supporters, his detractors, people in the middle, the international community, civil society. And the president himself is more responsible for Tunisia political crisis and the lack of a government in place than any other single Tunisian politician, with him blocking prime ministers that he named and then blocking the government formation on the claim that some of the ministers might be corrupt. But that's not a reason to reject all the ministers and everything the prime ministers are trying to do. So he has to do this. He knows he has to do it. And the U.S. prompting just reinforces that.
Finer told the Tunisian president that empowering a new government to stabilize the economy will also create a space for an inclusive dialogue about proposed constitutional and electoral reforms in response to the widely expressed demands of many Tunisians. Would the president allow such a space for an inclusive dialogue?
Probably not. And so far, so bad. But each word of the American statement is packed with a backstory. And those words are very, very carefully chosen. Part of the backstory is that the president fired the whole IMF negotiating team. The finance minister fled to Italy. He replaced the U.S. ambassador, who was key to this, actually put him in another ministry and then fired him and his team, which was on the brink of signing a new multi-billion dollar IMF loan package with very Tunisia favorable terms and very little austerity. And he's almost put them back to square one. And so the economic crisis got worse, and the U.S. believes that the economy does have to be addressed right away, or Tunisia will spiral into a much worse economic situation now that international investors and those who have, you know, business interests in Tunisia just won't be doing anything in the context of businessmen not feeling they can travel at all, and the economy basically frozen by the president's actions. So right now, there's no indications the president will be inclusive or have a true dialogue, since he believes he's empowered by the street and his followers not to have a dialogue at all, to arrest anyone he wants, and to block the activity of any political party or any institution that opposes him. So the only solution here, if Tunisians are going to get what they want, which is a different political system with more more powers for the president, electoral reforms that make it more of a bottom-up direct democracy, and other constitutional reforms can only happen if the whole political class agrees, rather than just a plebiscite and a decree. But if we have actual national dialogue, a national constituent assembly, and most Tunisians agree to the changes, that's a great outcome for Tunisia. But it doesn't look like we're heading in that direction.
During the meeting, Saeed told Feiner that the exceptional measures he took last month were within the framework of implementing the Tunisian constitution, and also told Feiner that there was no cause for concern regarding the values of freedom, justice, and democracy that Tunisia shares with the U.S. society. What do you make of that?
Article 80, which he deployed to basically stop the political system from functioning for 30 days and perhaps many months longer if he chooses to extend it, and there's no check and balance on him not to extend it, says that he can seize all these powers if there's an imminent danger. And then he says that there's corruption causing him to do that, corruption that's existed for three decades and got worse under his watch. Then he says, well, it's the political crisis, but no single Tunisian's caused the current political crisis more than him. Then he made the economic crisis worse, and the social crisis has existed for decades. So using a power that says, you know, he can seize all powers for 30 days if there's an imminent threat to the country to address decades-long problems is not an appropriate use of the Constitution. So he's a bit like a cat up a tree. Instead of the fire department coming and helping him down out of the tree, he's building a treehouse up there. Or another metaphor people are using is, you know, the medicine shouldn't kill the patient. And right now, the medicine is slowly killing the patient.
That was William Lawrence, professor of political science at the American University in Washington, speaking with VOA senior analyst whether the U.S. message would prompt the Tunisian leader to deliver. More than 400 businesses have joined a class action lawsuit against the South African government. The firms and individuals are claiming compensation from the state, which they allege failed to protect them during the public violence that rocked the country a month ago. Mobs rampaged across parts of the provinces of Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal, looting and destroying property following the jailing of former President Jacob Zuma for contempt of court. Darren Taylor has more.
The lawsuit's being put together by Action South Africa. Party leader Herman Mashaba says state security forces did nothing for 3 days while crowds pillaged businesses, burned warehouses to the ground, and attacked people. The police say more than 350 people were killed in the chaos. Mashaba says the class action's main objective is to win damages from the government.
We've got already 420 businesses that are joining our lawsuit. Without any doubt, more and more businesses will come to the party. We have to really demand compensation for the damages. So we want the compensation. Those people who've lost their businesses, their properties, people who've lost their loved ones, I think we want to hold this government accountable. We will hold them personally liable for the action or their inaction.
Mashaba says the suit also aims to force the government to reveal the real figures behind what President Cyril Ramaphosa has called an attempted insurrection.
The law enforcement agencies, they said they'll be making arrests. 3 weeks later, they're arresting musicians and music DJs, not the actual perpetrators, because they know the people behind this are the RET factions within the ANC.
Mashaba's referring to the supporters of so-called Radical Economic Transformation, or RET, within the ruling African National Congress, or ANC. These factions have declared loyalty to Zuma. The public violence erupted soon after the former president was imprisoned for 15 months for refusing to testify at an inquiry into corruption that happened when he led the country between 2008 and 2018. Mashaba says the government will obviously use taxpayers' money to oppose Action SA's lawsuit and to try to prevent the matter from being heard in court.
We are resolute to make sure that ultimately this particular case must actually appear in a court of law so that we can prove beyond any reasonable doubt that this destruction of our economy, the loss of over 300 lives, is got to do everything with the ANC and the presidential Ramaphosa's administration.
The government denies it's trying to cover up the truth about the violence. Mashaba isn't buying it.
There were people behind the scenes who were paid to destroy the infrastructure to make South Africa ungovernable.
He says his party's lawyers will present evidence to show that the ANC isn't telling the truth, because if the true perpetrators were to be arrested, it would split the party even further and severely dent its re-election prospects. Mashaba insists the arrests so far of minor characters accused of inciting violence through social media are a smokescreen.
This government of President Ramaphosa, they take us as South Africans as fools when actually diverting attention from actually going after the actual perpetrators of this insurrection. I think this was really one of those ANC government's ploy to divert attention from the real issue.
That real issue, says Mashaba, is there are senior ANC officials actively working to overthrow Ramaphosa. But to act against them, he says, would be to destroy the party once and for all. He asks, how did musicians, ordinary citizens, a DJ, and a politician that no one's even heard of organize what the government itself has suggested was an attempted coup? For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
UNHCR, the United Nations Refugee Agency, is calling on Congolese authorities to increase security and protect women and girls from widespread systematic sexual attacks by rival armed groups in Democratic Republic of Congo's Tanganyika province. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Horrific attacks against women and girls are taking place in the so-called Triangle of Death. This is an area bordering several localities between Tanganyika, Maniema, and South Kivu provinces. Over the past 2 weeks, humanitarian agencies have recorded 243 incidents of rape, including rape of 48 children. The UN Refugee Agency says these figures are shocking and extremely high, but do not reflect the true extent and gravity of these crimes. UNHCR spokeswoman Shabia Mantu says the actual figures are thought to be significantly higher. She says many cases of sexual abuse are not reported. This is because gender-based violence remains largely taboo, and women who are sexually abused can face stigma and exclusion from their families.
The attacks are reportedly being carried out by rival armed groups competing to maintain control over mining areas, especially gold mines, and as retaliation against government-led military operations. Civilians find themselves trapped in the middle of intense confrontations between different groups.
Violence and insecurity in this region have uprooted nearly 310,000 people. Local authorities report more than 23,000 have been displaced since May in northern Tanganyika's Kongolo territory alone. They say most have fled insecurity multiple times in the past 3 months. Mantu says an average of 17 sexual attacks are reported every day. She says rape victims suffer huge physical and psychological trauma, but have difficulty receiving needed medical and psychological care.
Our staff have heard horrific testimonies of extreme violence. Forcibly displaced people have accused armed groups of carrying out mass rape as women attempt to flee their homes. Some women and girls have been abducted and used as sex slaves by armed group members. Ransoms have been demanded from families in exchange for their freedom.
The UNHCR is urging the Congolese government to do more to protect civilians, especially women and girls, and to ensure humanitarian access to the displaced. It also is calling for investigations into these atrocities and for the perpetrators to be brought to justice. The UNHCR is appealing for greater international support, saying it has received only 36% of the $205 million required for its DRC operation. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
President Felix Tshisekedi announced yesterday that the U.S. Special Forces will soon be deployed to the Democratic Republic of Congo's restive eastern region to combat Islamist violence. The Special Forces arrived in Congo's capital, Kinshasa, on Friday, according to a Reuters report, and the president said they will stay for several weeks. Martial law was established in May in the region to try to end decades of bloodshed. Much of the unrest in the region is attributed to the Allied Democratic Forces, an Islamist-inspired insurgency which U.S. officials have linked to Islamic State. Ivory Coast has declared its first Ebola case in more than 25 years after the Institut Pasteur confirmed the virus in samples from a patient hospitalized in the capital Abidjan after arriving from Guinea. World Health Organization Regional Director for Africa, Dr. Machi Diso Moeti, said it is of immense concern that the outbreak has been declared in Abidjan, a city of more than 4 million people. WHO says it is helping to coordinate cross-border Ebola response activities, and 5,000 Ebola vaccine doses, which the organization helped secure to fight the outbreak in Guinea, are being transferred to Ivory Coast. This year, Ebola outbreaks have been declared in the Democratic Republic of Congo and Guinea. But this is the first time an outbreak has occurred in a large capital city such as Abidjan since the 2014-2016 West Ebola outbreak. Gunmen have carried out the latest mass school kidnapping in Nigeria, killing 3 security personnel in a shootout while snatching 15 students and several staff members. The abductions took place last night at the College of Agriculture and Animal Science in Bakura in northwest Zamafra State. Abductions for ransom, particularly at schools and colleges, began 7 years ago by extremist group Boko Haram. They have expanded to criminal gangs and increased in northwestern Nigeria over the past 8 months. The Botswana government says it has begun negotiations to buy vaccines for children under the age of 12, even before clinical trials are completed. President Mokgweetsi Masisi says the plan is to get ahead in the competitive vaccination acquisition system by pre-purchasing the doses given the shortages that have developed for adults. From Habrone, Botswana, reporter Makdisi Dube has the details.
In a televised address to the nation Friday, Masisi said the country had faced difficulties in sourcing vaccines.
Allow me to underscore the fact that the acquisition of COVID-19 vaccines has not been easy. Despite the delayed supply, we have been constantly engaging with the suppliers for an expedited delivery of vaccines. Indications are that we will receive a significant number of vaccines between August and December 2021.
It is for this reason, Masisi says, the country is working on pre-purchasing vaccines for children under 12. Children under 12 are not yet eligible for a COVID-19 vaccine, but Pfizer and Moderna are running clinical trials. The extremely contagious Delta variant has not spared children, hence efforts to develop a vaccine for youngsters.
Botswana is simultaneously negotiating for additional doses from several companies. The negotiations include vaccines for children under 12 years old. Our plan is to pre-purchase doses for children even before the clinical trials are completed.
After giving assurances over the arrivals of sufficient vaccines to inoculate the entire adult population, Masisi was left disappointed due to late deliveries. In some instances, the country, battling a high COVID-19 rate, has run out of vaccine stock in the middle of the program. Botswana has thus far received nearly 700,000 doses, but the vaccination program has been slow, with only 5% or about 125,000 people fully vaccinated. For VOA, this is Mkondisi Dube in Habaroni, Botswana.
And That wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.